Welcome to Intimate Conversations. I'm your host, Alana Pratt. I'm passionate about your relationships thriving and your family flourishing through a healthy, intimate relationship with yourself, with Source, and with your beloved. So sit back, relax, because it's time to get intimate.
It is so great to be back with all of you on Intimate Conversations, and I love the pre-show chat as well as I get to know my guests and welcome some of you to the show. With me today is Mr. Ross Rosenberg. Yes, so many letters behind his name, I'm so impressed. First of all, it's M.ED.LCPC and CADC, of which I have no clue what it is, but it's very impressive. He is a successful psychotherapist, codependency and sex addiction expert, counseling agency owner, in-demand seminar speaker, and author of a new book that I want to share with you today, The Human Magnet Syndrome. And to write his book, he tapped into 25 years of experience working with codependent clientele, as well as his own personal transformational journey. And here's what he has to say: powerful and predictable, though largely unconscious, forces drive our relationship choices. You can fall victim to them, or you can change them. He believes that it's possible to break the cycle of dysfunctional romantic relationships. None of us do that, do we? No! With people who hurt us. This new book provides practical and clear information to help you better understand why you're attracted to and maintain romantic relationships with people who habitually hurt you. So this is really good, really vulnerable. We're going to go right to the core here as you listen in on your computer. If you are, alanapratt.com/human-magnet-syndrome, human magnet syndrome with little dashes in the middle, to grab your copy of the book. But without further ado, thank you so much for being on the show, Ross.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm quite happy that you invited me.
Oh, well, it's so vulnerable because I don't know how much you know about me, but like I've got two divorces in my pocket and I'm pretty sure I was, you know, attracted to romantic relationships that, you know, hurt me. So I just want you to know that while I'm very impressed with all that you've accomplished and I want to learn all that we can learn, you can ask me anything and we can go as deep as you want because this is indeed intimate. And I think it lets other people feel safe to reveal their truth so that they can change it. So why don't we start with the personally? I know before the show started, you were saying how you live outside of Chicago and you just recently got married 5 years ago. What's your romantic relationship journey look like?
Well, I've hit every wall that a man could possibly hit. In fact, I also have been married twice. And
yeah.
You would think that a psychotherapist who works with codependents would not have that type of path.
Right.
But so I had found myself always falling in love with beautiful women who seemed very nice, who wanted to participate with me in a lot. This relationship was a lot of fun and a lot of excitement. And within months, sometimes even sooner, it would devolve into something that was more about someone being selfish and narcissistic and me trying to help them and me trying to solve their problems. And that was my path for most of my adult life, which led me to marriages and two divorces.
Right.
And fortunately, I hit that wall, and I had to look deep inside of myself, and I had to figure out, what is it about me that keeps me or in these relationships or finds me attracted to these type of women? Because it's really easy as a therapist to diagnose people. It's really easy for me to look at someone else and say, well, this is wrong. This is their problem. Mm-hmm. But it's when I took a deep, honest look at myself, things started to change.
Yeah. That takes such courage and vulnerability and honesty. So I'm pretty much like you. I would like to know if we could define some terms so that people understand, you know, what's going on. Like, what is codependent? What is narcissist? And what do those mean? How can we identify those?
Well, the way I describe it in my book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, codependents and narcissists or emotional manipulators are opposite dysfunctional personality types. A codependent is a person that gives and sacrifices and listens and is patient and is always giving so much more than he or she receives.
Right.
The narcissist is a taker. They're an exploiter. It's all about them. They capitalize on conversations. They exploit people. They try to get people to take care of them, but they're not willing to return that. Mm. And the two opposite personality types, the person who is oriented towards the other person's needs at the expense mm-hmm. of their own, mm-hmm. seems to be habitually, and I say magnetically, attracted to the person whose orientation in relationships is all about their own needs, the narcissist. Mm. So simply, narcissists, they have a self-orientation that they are all about their own needs at the exclusion of others. And codependents have this orientation, relationship orientation, where they're all about other people's needs at the exclusion of their own.
So it's a great match, but it probably sucks.
Well, you know, I use in my book the analogy of a dance. In fact, the dance analogy was an article I wrote that was the first idea that ultimately became the seminar that I give, and it became the idea for the book. If mm-hmm. you look at a good dancing couple, there's someone that needs to lead the dance.
Right.
And if that dance is going to look good, there has to be someone who is just as skilled at following. So we look at a dysfunctional relationship. The narcissist leads it, controls it, makes the dance about them. They know the pace, they know the steps, and the codependent is almost intuitively connected to what the other person wants, and they follow. And if this mm-hmm. is a good dance couple or a mm-hmm. very dysfunctional, well-matched couple, the codependent dancer and the narcissistic dancer work really well together. And I use that analogy in the therapy that I provide because mm-hmm. it kind of hits home for my codependent clients, and it helps them understand that they're always attracted to someone that is hurtful and opposite to them, and they're a part of that attraction. They're just not the victim.
Right. So, okay. So when you describe like that lovely dance, like to me that's really beautiful, but I can't imagine these relationships that hurt us are very beautiful. So while it's good to see what's going on, how do you help them make a different choice or create a dance that works for them better?
Well, using the dance concept, let me tell you what a beautiful relationship is. It is two individuals whose personalities are opposite. We all are either more oriented towards giving and more oriented towards our own needs. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just a personality type. And when there are two people that are really well-balanced, someone mm-hmm. who, like, for example, is a psychotherapist or a nurse that likes to listen and help but is healthy, mm-hmm. might be magnetically or automatically attracted to someone who's very confident and self-assured and has their own business. And that's a healthy person. What makes a beautiful dance, a healthy dance, is two opposite individuals who are well-matched but know how to give, know how to reciprocate, know how to be mutual in the way they are in their relationships. The healthy dance, the beautiful relationship, is about mutuality and reciprocity. And you can be different. And you can have this, what I call that magnetic attraction. The unhealthy dance that is perfectly balanced is a person who doesn't know how to stand up for themselves, who doesn't have good self-esteem, who's codependent, who always gives reflexively. They are going to be attracted almost unconsciously to that person who knows how to control, who knows how to make things about themselves. It's almost this natural fit, and that's why we get drawn into these relationships over and over again, because we fall in love with someone that feels so natural, that is such a good pairing for us. So I'm not sure if that answered your question, but...
Well, kind of, yeah. So if I'm hearing your point of view here is that both the unhealthy narcissistic codependent relationship and the healthy one person more a giver, one person more a receiver, there's still those two differences, but one is like not a narcissist and healthy in their confidence, but they also have the capacity, even though maybe they're not like a needy taker, even though they prefer to receive or whatever, they can still give. And even
yes.
though the person that's a giver, that in a healthy relationship, they're not all the way into codependent, like I'm not enough or they'll leave me unless I give away everything. They're a natural giver, but they also know how to ask for what they want.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
And what I did, Yes, I am. And what I did in the book to simplify it is I came up with a theory and or an explanation. It's called the continuum of self theory. It's a very simple explanation that on this continuum, it measures someone's self-orientation. Are you more oriented towards other people's needs in a relationship? Are you more oriented towards your own needs? So think of it. What is a person who's all about everyone else's needs and not their own? The most extreme version of that is a codependent.
Right.
So the codependent is all the way on one end of the continuum. On the other side of the continuum, how do you describe someone who's all about their own needs at the exclusion of others? Well, that's a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
So we all fit somewhere in that continuum, and as you go towards the middle, you are progressively more healthy. So let's say someone like me, who is very much connected to my own needs in my career, you know, I write books. I do my seminar, I own a business, I'm really about myself, but I worked hard, so I consider myself emotionally and psychologically healthy, but I'm more oriented towards my own needs, but I can reciprocate. But who am I going to be attracted to? I fell instantly in love with Carell Rosenberg, my wife, and she is so naturally a caretaker. She loves to take care of me and my son. She loves to watch out for us, but she's not codependent. She knows how to set boundaries. So here is someone who's mildly has a self-orientation that is about other people, but can set boundaries. And then she's then going to be attracted to someone who's like me. So we have that beautiful dance. So I use that continuum to explain how we all kind of fit and we all kind of match up.
So the
continuum is just a good way to kind of plot yourself on this little line, and it'll show why when you fall in love with someone, why it feels so right, because they're a perfect match and yet they're opposite.
Right. So who were you being during your first two marriages, and how did you shift into what sounds like a healthy relationship now?
Well, I can't be too specific. But my first marriage was with a woman who was very, very hurtful and harmful to me. Although she would not consider that, it's easier to explain that narcissists in general are not aware that they have a problem. They're not aware that they hurt people. In fact, they always feel like they're right. And if you tell them that they're wrong, they get very upset. Mm. And so my tendency was to be in relationships with people who were on a very narcissistic side, who needed me to take care of them, who needed everything to be about them. And I felt, as this codependent caretaking person, new therapist, I could save them. I could solve their problems if I just cared enough, if I just was patient enough. I felt their pain, and there was something about their pain that it's hard to explain. It just felt so natural.
Mm.
And the difference between them and me is I eventually got into therapy and learned that I didn't have to be in a relationship in which I was hurt consistently with someone who, and that's where things shifted for me.
Got it. You sound like you're speaking of one of my marriages too, because what happened for me was I was attracted to, I guess I do coaching, right? So I was attracted to someone who I felt I could help. And then the feedback was, oh, like from his friends or work people, oh my God, he's so much nicer, easier to get along with. Like he's so great now that you're in his life. And so I was like, wow, I guess I make a difference. I guess this is right. I guess I fed off of it. So I gave more, and then they had better comments. And so I gave more until I so lost myself here. And and the minute I asked for anything for me, it was like, no, and that I was crazy. And I guess I was so empty and lacking in self-esteem that I believed the craziness. And so I just stopped asking that I was crazy. And I stopped asking for anything for me until I finally woke up one day and got a divorce. So, what do you think
go ahead. And that's the dance that you're in. You were in, until you woke up and realized you needed to be safe and healthy and get the divorce, you were locked into this reciprocal dance, and you found it couldn't work anymore.
So what do you think happened or didn't happen so that I and you and so many other people become codependent and are attracted to narcissists? Like, what did we miss growing up, or what was never explained to us or developed within us?
It's actually a lot more simple than people think. Codependence always have. They always have a parent that is on the narcissistic side, someone who has one of the three disorders that I call the emotional manipulator disorders. Whether it's a narcissist, uh-huh. a borderline, or a sociopath, or an addict. If your early childhood experiences with a parent who is narcissistic, something happens during those formative years in which you realize that the love that you're going to get is all conditional. The narcissist cannot give love unless they get something in return. So if you are unlucky enough to have a narcissistic parent, a person like you, Alana, you and me, probably as children, early on, our relationship template was set. We learned that for us to get the love that we so much desired and needed, as all children should get, we had to be a certain way. We had to listen. We had to be the nice person. We had to be the cute, the handsome. We had to be the patient kid. And we learned that by being that type of kid, we got the love that we wanted. And that right. was the setup, was the template right. that we learned about love and relationships that we would bring unconsciously into our adult relationships later on.
Got it. So what were those three? You called them emotional manipulators. So narcissist, what were the other two?
Yeah, the emotional manipulators are narcissistic personality disorder, borderline yeah. personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, and or a addict. All of these three psychological disorders have in common an extreme narcissistic focus.
Oh, got it. Okay. Because my dad was a drug and alcohol abuser, so that was my upbringing. So that makes sense there. So given that you're kids and you just sort of do your best, and now that you start to date, high school, maybe first marriage, et cetera, what's one of the first things people can do when they do go, oh, my God, I can see this now. I'm not going to hide in shame about it. I understand it was, you know, my environment growing up, and this was the best I could figure out how to get love. Now I have awareness. I can make a new choice, but shit, if I know what to choose, like, help me here. What do I do?
You know, actually, it's a lot more complicated than just making a choice and trying to do the right thing, because that relationship template that I talked about really is embedded in your unconscious awareness. It's really about you as a child or me as a child. We were wounded. We were hurt. We were not loved in a way that made our childhood very difficult. And I believe that if you until you wrap your arms around the sum total of your childhood and your experience and understand that you're wounded and you never felt good about yourself, I believe that's where the most important psychological growth occurs, and that's where the relationship, that's where the codependence starts to get healthy. So my psychotherapy starts where what I call it the original condition. We go back, we peel the onion one layer at a time, and we find out where it all started. And that's where we start, and we talk. And then there's tears, there's anger, there's sadness, there's depression when we have to reconcile that our own children, our own parent or parents could not love us in the way that we wanted them to. Mm-hmm. And then we move forward in this therapeutic process, and through this forward but healing therapy approach, my clients start to, like, it's like a wound inside of them. That wound that was formed as a child starts to heal, and from there, the psychotherapy that teaches and coaches sticks. They're able to implement it. They're able to understand these why it's important to take care of themselves, why it's important to make healthy choices. It's a wonderful therapy process. I enjoy it, and I also went through it myself.
Ah, very good. So do you believe that without getting to the core young you that's inside you and being able to love them into the present moment and then create from that present moment a future that works for you? Do you believe it's possible? Like, I remember, because I'm a coach, I'm not a therapist, but I had been to a lot of, like, personal growth programs. All you need to do is take action, take five more steps, and I just kept going, this feels like, and the way I'm kind of graphic, sorry, but it's like sprinkles on top of an ice cream cone of shit. I'm like, I still know there's shit in here. You can put as many sprinkles as you want. I'll be in as much action as you want. I'll smile as much as you want. My heart still hurts.
Right.
So how does it take a long time? You know, do a lot of people not want to do the work because it's painful? Or what have you noticed when people transform in your therapy?
Well, first I have to comment on your very colorful explanation about the sprinkles. I use a less colorful explanation, and I call it a Band-Aid. That,
okay.
You know, that if you're in psychotherapy and someone is working on problems and they're just working on the surface, well, you know, what do Band-Aids do? They eventually fall off. They don't last.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to your question, it's very risky and sometimes very threatening for a codependent to start therapy. Because, now you have to remember, if they are in a perfectly balanced, dysfunctional relationship with the narcissist, and they are equally dysfunctional as the codependent, what happens to the codependent when they start standing up for themselves? What happened to you, or what happened to me, when I started setting boundaries with some of the women I was in a relationship with?
Oh, my God.
It's not pretty.
Oh, it's terrifying. And so you just shrink back down again. Yeah.
It's terrifying because the narcissist has so much motivation and so much at stake to knock the codependent back. And they know how to do it. And the codependent reels from that because that goes to the core. So the reason I bring that up is we therapists have to respect how frightening it is for the codependent to make those changes.
Yeah.
And I have this saying that I use. I call it my Surgeon General warning. Just like if you get a pack of cigarettes, it says something like, if you smoke it, you're going to die.
Yeah,
or something more gruesome. I say in the beginning of therapy, if you get better with your codependency, I promise you, and take this to the bank, everyone's going to get mad at you. The people that love you, your family's going to get mad at you. Your boyfriend or your narcissistic husband or narcissistic girlfriend's going to get mad at you. Everyone's going to get mad at you. You are going to question whether you should even do this because everyone is so used to you being this codependent. But if you hang in there and you stay tough and you stay courageous, I promise the following. The people that don't really love you will be mad at you and they're going to go away because you're not providing them with their narcissistic needs. The people that love you, they're going to start to accommodate or get used to your changes. Their anger will go from annoyance, and then in months later, it'll turn into acceptance, and those people will love you, and they will love you more than they ever did. They just won't know it. And that's the scary part, is to get past those 2, 3, 6, maybe months, maybe a year, where you have to change everything. Because if you've been codependent your whole life, and you start to set boundaries and speak up for yourself, everyone's going to get mad at you, and they're not even, and most of them won't even realize that they're hurting you.
Yeah. I love what you're saying. I'm reminded, I interviewed, I can't remember his name, I think it was Henry E. Miller, was that his name? He is a psychotherapist to the LA Lakers. And and a lot of narcissistic behavior going on. And
I bet, yes. And
what he was, I can see here in one of your questions that you gave me. Thank you so much. Is it true that the narcissists are unwilling to get help, but the codependent will get help? Or you can't reach a narcissist, but you can reach a codependent, even though you're saying you were a Surgeon General warning?
Well, see, my Surgeon General warning only works for codependents. Now,
that's
we have to understand
why.
Yeah, we have to understand why. Narcissists, by the very nature of their disorder or their personality type, do not like to be told that there's anything wrong with them. In fact, if you hit that there's something wrong with them, they get mad at you, and sometimes they go into a rage.
Yeah.
This type of personality type is not prone to say, golly gee, I think I need to get some help with my self-esteem and my relationship. I'm going to get therapy. Now, this person, if you say you need therapy, they're going to scream, yell, or guilt trip you, or whatever. So it is a specific criterion with disorders that they do not know that they have problems, therefore they do not seek help. So it's unlikely that the narcissist is going to get help because of the nature of their disorder. But it's also important for me to add that they are much more psychologically damaged individuals than the codependent. The childhood that they had was much more severe. So these individuals aren't going to get the therapy because they don't think anything's wrong, and if you push them, they're going to push back.
Wow. So okay, so we were clear what happened in our childhood. One of those four emotional manipulator things happened, and we became codependent. What happened to a narcissist in their childhood to create those behaviors?
Okay, it's actually not that complicated. A narcissist like a codependent, has the same parent. Narcissists and codependents are created by narcissistic or emotional manipulators. The difference is the child who's going to become codependent learned to adapt to the narcissist by being the pleasing, the likable, the trophy child, the child that can make the narcissist feel good about themselves. But what about the child who is from a narcissist who can't make their parent feel good, who maybe likes to say no or is colicky or has anxiety or just doesn't have the right personality to make the narcissist happy? That child becomes the object of the narcissist's wrath. Remember, if you don't make a narcissist happy,
the narcissist gets
mad. The narcissist has a fantasy when they have a child, and that fantasy is that child is going to make them happy, and they put everything in that child to make them happy. And when that child does it, that child experiences a much different, much more traumatic, and much more damaging childhood. So that child, instead of the codependent who learns to please and learns how to take care of others, this child learns to shut down. This child learns to be angry and full of shame. And those are the seeds of narcissism. And this child shuts down and believes the world's unsafe, the world's unlovable, and only by taking care of myself will I ever get my needs met. And that template, that relationship template is set for the narcissist, just like the relationship template for the codependent who learns, hey, I can make mommy happy when I just am the perfect girl or the perfect boy. So they both have the same parent. It's how they adapted to that parent and how the parent treated them that ultimately determines which disorder they have.
Holy shit, this is so cool to me. Okay, so so this is like totally Atlanta personal right now. So I divorced a narcissist of whom I have a son with, and I had whatever, drug addicted dad, whatever. Okay, so I chose I'm going to try to please him no matter what. I became codependent. I became a coach. I helped people with what I needed help with. I got help myself, and I think I'm doing pretty good. Now, I have a boy who goes back and forth between the two of us. How can I best support? I mean, I just be the most healthy person I can be with him when I'm with him, but how can I support him in having a healthier response to his father so that he doesn't turn into a narcissist, hopefully gets through his codependence and gets healthy as well?
Well, you know what? Your worry is my worry. I have a son who's 19 years old. And
how old is your son?
He's 19 years old.
19,
and I got 19 now, but I had his custody when he was 9. He spent the first eight years with his mother. And so what I have been conscious of is, what do I have to do to make the difference? See, I think that our adult mental health is a sum total. I know this is kind of simple, but our adult mental health is a sum total of all the negative and the positive that happened to us as children.
Right.
And if more negative happened, you're going to have worse psychological problems as an adult. So that very simple idea has stuck in the back of my head, that I always try to provide the positive.
Right.
I am supportive. I set boundaries. I think I spoil them a little bit. I finally met a woman who I can give him as a role model of what it's like to be in a healthy relationship. So the best we can do, Alana, is to provide him examples of healthy psychological environments, to love them unconditionally, and not go overboard, which is my challenge, because I go overboard because I'm always trying to compensate for the other side. And that's the best we can do, is provide them with healthy love and healthy examples, solid examples of healthy relationships. And then we hope for the best.
Right. It's like, put your oxygen mask on first, take care of yourself, and thus you will be the best you can be for them. And then you have to let go. Damn,
exactly.
I thought you were going to have the answer. Damn you.
I do have the answer. It's like, continue what you're doing, and continue to do the very best you can do, because the difference between a codependent and you is you're working on it, and you're going against your grain and becoming a healthier person. You're not stuck all the way on the end of that continuum. Much like myself, we're on our own personal journey, and that's going to make all the difference in your child, because if you didn't do that, or if I didn't do that, our child would be destined to fulfill that same pattern in the next generation.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. It feels, I just think you're super cool and super smart. And just thank you for sharing your journey with my journey, because it's like, holy, to not be able to control the outcome, I just hate that. And I want to be able to ensure that he'll be okay, but all I can do is, you know, grow and become more healthy myself. And he sees the shifts in the way I am with his dad and how I'm becoming healthier and healthier all the time. So I think it gives him... He can watch and he can choose that for himself if he wants to respond in a different way. And then I'm glad you've been remarried. I'm not remarried yet, but as soon as I find somebody fabulous and, you know, show him what healthy love looks like, feels like, you know, what it's like, that'll also give him another bit of healing.
I promise one thing, Alana, is if you continue your path to become the very best that you are, you continue to battle forward. And work on yourself, something magically happens, and it happened to me, that the healthier, if you look at ourselves on the continuum, maybe we're all the way on the other end of the continuum on the codependent end. And as a codependent on the far end, we're going to be naturally always attracted to someone on the far end. But as we get healthier, and this is what happened to me, as I got healthier, I started to realize I was more attracted to healthier women. Right. And I was like a magnet. I was repelled by unhealthy women. So keep working on yourself. I keep working on myself. And what's going to happen is one day, what happened to me when I met Carell on Match.com, we met, our eyes locked, and we were knocked off our socks, just like all lovers are.
Wow.
And, you know, well, dysfunctional lovers are knocked off their socks too. That's the part of the human magnet syndrome, is we're all attracted to someone who's our opposite match. But as you're healthier, your opposite match is going to be healthier. And it just happens.
Right. From dysfunctional to functional, but you still get to have all of the yummy chemistry intensity, just none of the madness or the unkindness.
Absolutely.
So go back just 1 second. Let's say somebody is in that place where the Surgeon General warning of people are going to get mad at you, and those that don't love you, who cares, because it's good that they go away anyways, but the ones who do love you will eventually turn around into acceptance of your decision. What's the best practice or situation or structure or system to put into your life while you're going through that internal shift, but you're also dealing with people mad at you everywhere you turn, and you can often question? Because I remember with my son's father, I quote-unquote tried to break up with him before we got married, when we were engaged, when we were first married, when we first had the baby. Like, I can remember these times when I had the courage and I knew my truth, and but then, like, the wrath was so intense that I just shrunk down again until I finally left. I feel like if I had some different structures in place or people in place or something in place, maybe I could have actually followed through on the first time.
Well, I think of myself, because your experience seems so similar to my first marriage.
Yeah.
And the best answer I have for both of us is if we were, two things had to happen. We had to be ready for a major shift in our life that would have made us uncomfortable. And we had to have a really good therapist. Not all therapists are not the same. The type of therapist that helps with what I describe as the dysfunctional relationship template, the trauma, the damage that we experience as children, this is a special therapist. This is a therapist who understands what we call the psychodynamics of our childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the therapist that's going to understand how hard it is. He or she's going to support us. And that's what I did have that I eventually had. And it makes it easier, but it's still hard.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it all boils down to, and I hate to say this, is we have to hit bottom. And we all, you know, just like alcoholics, everyone has a different bottom. And your bottom might be at age 28. I don't know. I assume you're in your 20s.
You're so sweet. I'm in my 40s, but that's okay.
Well, if I'm ever going to be invited back, I might as well lower my
all
guess.
Good.
But I'm 52, so we all have different bottoms. And for me, my bottom was the humiliation of the second divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And it was me as a psychotherapist. It wasn't until I wrote the book that I even told people I was divorced twice. I was so ashamed of it. I wouldn't even dream to tell my clients, because I didn't want to ruin my credibility. That's how ashamed
right.
I was.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I'm so glad you said that about hitting rock bottom. I think it's so underrated. Because for me, it was like second marriage. I wasn't divorced yet. My mama just died. I had a infant, and this raging person was jumping out behind walls, pressing himself into me. I would push back. He would call the police saying I attacked him. It was just like nutso. And I was so, you were humiliated or embarrassed to tell people you'd been divorced. What am I supposed to do, this relationship coach who, you know, this craziness is happening? But hitting rock bottom, having lost my mom and being so emotional, hitting rock bottom and being sleep deprived with an infant, and then going, well, how much worse is it really going to get? It's going to get ugly until I do something. And I had this meditation. I don't know if meditation is part of your practice, but it was sort of like this pleading prayer / meditation, like, what the fuck, right? And this crotchety old woman in my meditation came to me. One of her eyeballs was hanging out. She's like, you are such a wuss, you know, and I'm like, oh, I am not. My mom just died, and he just quit his job the day our son was born, and what am I supposed to do, kick him out and figure all this out? She's like, yeah, I knew you could never do it. You're such a loser. And I'm like, oh, what? And then as soon as, like, it just woke something up in me. I don't know what it was. And I said, okay, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I will do this. And she transformed in my meditation into Xena, the warrior princess, and said, well, God, it's about time. You're really good at the whole mom thing. You're really good at the whole sexy thing. You're not so good at standing up for yourself being a warrior, okay? It's time to put some boundaries down. Here we go. And it was something inside of me that woke up, and then because it woke up inside, I started to manifest people on the outside, therapists, coaches, programs, et cetera, to support me, and I got out. So,
And it's interesting how our stories are that the people that move forward, they just can't stand their personal insanity. And insanity, according to Einstein, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
There's
a point at which, you know, after my second wife, who was actually really different than the first wife, but still dysfunctional or unhealthy. I think what changed me was my understanding. There was the very first kernel of my understanding of the human magnet syndrome, is that it was about me. There was something about me that makes me attracted to them. And I am the one that has really serious problems. And if I don't solve these problems, I'm going to find wife three, wife four, wife five. Just saying that makes me want to jump.
Jump off a
cliff. I found wife three, and she's my soulmate. As my dad would say, he's a narcissist, and my mom was a codependent, God bless her soul. But my dad would say, and only in his narcissistic way, what starts off as a soulmate ends up as a cellmate. So he knew something. And that's what it was, is when you're just ready to stop. And in fact, in my book, I have this poem by David White that captures, it's called True Love, and it's so beautiful. And I have it at the end of the book when I end with a really uplifting message to my readers that it can happen, and we can do this, and you can do it. And true love takes work, and it's sometimes painful.
Right. And yet you're such a beautiful man because you've been through these different times. You've even cultivated a career in helping others. You've done your own internal work. And yes, it is intense, but you've also found what you say is like a soulmate connection. And you're showing your beautiful boy, who's now a young man, you know, what real love is. Like, I so honor you for not giving up and continuing to put one foot in front of the other, even when it was hard. And I think the people that I most respect in this world, who I cherish as my closest friends, they've been like, they're kind of like, you know, the Marlboro Man, so sexy because he's so dirty, or Indiana Jones, like he's been through hell and he made it through and got the whatever crystal skull. You know, beautiful people have kinks, scars, wounds, but they transform into what I call, I'm an art history major, so like art. My favorite art isn't just like some perfect little thing. It's you know, you've worked at it. You've just you're better because of it. You've turned your kinks into art. And I so honor who you are and all that you've accomplished. And I'm a piece of art in the making too. Just continuing to keep going and be open to that great, wonderful, loving experience.
Well, thank you, and I really appreciate your generous feedback. But I have to say, it's not as textbook and wonderful as you think. My wife and I met, and if you think of us, we're always on that continuum. She was probably a little bit too much on the codependent side, and I was a little bit too much on the self side. And even in the beginning of this relationship, there was some issues. But the difference between Carell and me than any of the other women that I've ever met is that we both love each other and we both wanted to work on ourselves and work on the relationship. Mm. And because and that's the secret is we all come to this relationship, you know, with our flaws and our, you know, and our but it's if we love each other enough to listen, to consider that maybe we're wrong sometimes and to do the very difficult work. And it's because of that we're 5 years into the marriage, and I am more in love with her now than I was when I, the first year of our marriage, is because we're in the process of becoming healthy.
Right.
And I think it's a lifelong journey.
Oh, for sure. Well, if what got you to her was all of the work that you've done, so the doing, quote-unquote, the work, continuing to expand and grow, it would just make sense that you would continue to do that in your relationship as well. The difference is you've got two of you now, not just one of you that's willing to do the work. And I really think that's what it came down to with the first two marriages is I kept growing and they didn't want to. And now I'm at least at a place where I don't attract full-blown narcissists anymore. I attract people that are more and more conscious and willing to do the work to be more and more conscious. And I'm getting closer.
And that's the best that we can ask is we're on a path. I think our life is a journey of learning, and we never stop. And as long as we find some help, happiness and some love, we're ahead of the game.
Yeah. I think it's really smart, too, that you said this about your relationship, because I think some of us think that, you know, the goal of life is to find that soulmate or the goal. Well, the goal means the end. Like, that's when they play the music and go to commercial break. So, like, it can't be the end of your life if that's the goal. But if that's, like, a moving target and you keep growing and there's more and more becoming and you keep evolving, then the relationship can go somewhere and you don't put all that pressure on yourself or the other. So I'm really glad you shared that as well. What do you guys, like, maybe we can just kind of wrap this up. What are, like, one or two of your most effective practices you have as a couple that keeps you growing? Is it something you do together, something you do on your own, a bit of both?
You know, I think the what's been working really well with us is we quit getting reactively mad because once we stop getting reactively mad, see, once you get really mad at someone, the other person shuts down and gets defensive.
Sure.
And once we started to just kind of laugh at the person's stupidity or mistakes or bad judgment, it just stopped the cycle of it escalating into something dysfunctional. And it's amazing how simple that was. The secret was we just taught ourselves that we don't have to get mad and hunker down and be defensive.
Right.
And as long as we do that, we still can be mad and upset. We're not battling. We're not fighting the present while also the past. We're dealing with, we have a more of a sense of humor of why sometimes we don't like each other. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, humor is great, and it doesn't seem to be like that stinging judgment towards one another, more of like a humorous appreciation of differences.
Right.
A lot more space to stay connected. That makes sense. That works with my son as well. He's 10. Like if I just joke about the toilet seat being up and I fell down into the depths of the darkness in the middle of the night and I say, but I swam and I never gave up and I came back up through the toilet. And he's like, Mom, stop. And I go, could you please put the toilet seat down? He's like, no problem. And so, yeah, humor can really help. So I get it. What's, so alanaprat.com/human-magnet-syndrome to get his book about why we love people who hurt us. What's one thing that you think they'll take away when they finish reading this book?
They're going to get hope. You can't change something if you don't understand it. And what my book does, The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People That Hurt Us, it helps explain something that up until you read the book, you had no explanation for. And with the explanation, then you can seek a coach, a therapist, a best friend, whomever. That's where the real change happens, because it's impossible to change something if you don't really understand the problem. And we talked about the sprinkled ice cream and the Band-Aid.
Right.
All that stuff is just temporary fixes. The book is the beginning of authentic and real change.
Yay! High five to you. You are awesome, Mr. Ross Rosenberg. Is it Rosenberg or Rosenberg? Which way do I say it right? Rosenberg?
It's Rosenberg.
Rosenberg, perfect. The Human Magnet Syndrome. Get your copy and really embrace your capacity to create lasting change. And thank you for who you are, all you do, and congratulations on all that you've created and all that is still yet to be enjoyed in your life. I appreciate you and thank you for being on the show. All my love. Take care to all of you. Bye-bye.